The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Hello, I'm Stuart Clarkson. Coming up shortly, Roy Martin will be here to look at the big stories of the week, including news of Bauer's new classical music station, Scala Radio, with Simon Mayo. And we'll hear later from the new Community Media Association chair, Danny Lawrence. But first, let's get straight to the big radio show launch of the week, as Chris Evans began on Virgin Radio UK. Just a week on from Zoe Ball taking over his old show, this Monday it was Chris's turn. Here's how the first link went.
It's 6:32, it's Monday. Nice edit. It's the 21st of January 2019, and this is our breakfast show live on Virgin Radio. It is your breakfast show on international Virgin Radio. It's so great to be back on Virgin, and I have to say it's a real treat. We are blessed and we couldn't be more grateful, and we have these people on board too.
The Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky, the best entertainment all in one place. Virgin Radio.
There's been a lot of talk about what's the first song I'm going to play, but of course, you know, I just press buttons. I don't play songs. Musicians play songs. So how about we get a musician to play a song live 12 feet away from me now this morning. How about Richard Ashcroft, everybody?
And we can talk now to two of Chris's bosses, the Wireless Group content director for music stations, Francis Curry, and Virgin Radio's content director, Mike Cass. They're both in the shiny new studios at the top of the News UK building next to the shower. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Hi. Hi.
So how's it looking there, first of all? Is the studio build is getting there, is it, on that top floor?
Well, I'm staring out from the 17th floor of the News UK building, glancing through the new TalkSport studios and the facilities that they'll be moving into in the next couple of weeks. Out of the window, I'm lucky enough to be able to see the walkie-talkie at the back of that. You've got the cheese grater, the gherkins hiding somewhere around there. If I was closer to the window, we'd be able to see Tower Bridge, the Tower of London, HMS Belfast, the Monument. So in terms of views from radio stations, this is perhaps the best I have ever seen. And, you know, working in brand new studio facilities, there's always glitches in when you move in somewhere new. But the level of forethought and the planning that has gone into this is absolutely phenomenal.
He's gone into tour guide mode already, hasn't he, Francis? So not only a new house this week, but a new baby as well. How are you happy with a couple of shows in, how Chris is sounding?
We have had such fun this week. I mean, it's not often you would do this. We've launched two new national radio stations. We've relocated to a new building that not only has a brand new studio complex in it, but has also never had radio studios in it before. And we've launched a breakfast show with the UK's number one radio talent. That's not bad for a week's work, right?
It's all right. So Chris's studio isn't ready for it. I know he's been talking about this on the air, but he's on the 14th floor at the moment.
So in terms of logistics, what we've got is on the 14th floor, we've got the Talk Radio Studios. The challenge we had is that the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky is a big cast. So when we launched the show yesterday, we actually, within I think half an hour, had six open mics in the studio. And I think people who regularly spend time in studios know how challenging that can be. So we definitely did a proper sink soak test yesterday. But to accommodate a show like that, and even then we had Richard Ashcroft outside the studios in the office playing live, and he was phenomenal. But going forward, what we'd like to do is have even the music guests in the studio as well. So potentially we've got four main guests plus Vassos plus Rachel plus a music guest. And frankly, it's kind of tough to accommodate those in a studio built for two. So when we took on the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky, what we also agreed to do was that we would try and create the perfect radio environment for what is a unique radio show. So that's what we're doing at the moment, which means we are like cuckoos and we have hijacked the Talk Radio Studio. So they love us because they haven't moved from Hatfields yet to the news building, because we're there for a couple of months while we just finish off the brand new studio.
And every time you mention the Chris Evans Breakfast Show, I've noticed already you're throwing in the Sky mention. Let's talk about that now. This is something different for Chris, I suppose, compared to when he was in commercial radio before. It's quite a departure compared with a lot of commercial radio, to have a headline sponsor but no spot ads on the show. So it seems to have been fairly well received in the industry, doesn't it?
Well, funnily enough, Sky worked with Chris at Virgin in the previous incarnation of Virgin Radio, so they have a very long relationship. But I think it's unique. It's definitely unique in the UK. I don't know if it's unique in the world. And I absolutely love it, because what we've got is a situation where we've got the number one broadcaster, at least in the UK, if not in Europe. And we've paired it with a unique commercial radio environment where we've got one sponsor who probably are one of the most innovative, forward-thinking and supportive businesses to work with for a radio station. I mean, they have such great insight and depth and understanding about radio. And what that means is for us, not only no ad breaks, and of course for a BBC audience and a proportion of Chris's audience on Radio 2 never listen to commercial radio or never have. So it's like rolling out the red carpet and putting down the welcome mat to new commercial radio listeners. So we've removed one of the biggest roadblocks. We've got the best broadcaster. And having that relationship with Sky allows us to produce, I think, a much richer and fuller show. So in terms of exclusive content, in terms of guests, in terms of access to events, in terms of competitions and prizes, in terms of promotional support, it allows us to move into an area that really very few radio stations, if any, have ever been allowed to play in before.
And I think, as Chris explained on the air on his first day, as he was telling the listeners how it was going to work, it's only like him talking about Strictly or other BBC products while he was on there at Radio 2, isn't it?
So. Absolutely. I think the thing is that when you look at how people consume the different media, different TV shows, and different films and everything, people are very used to having their friends recommend things to them. And that's realistically what we're trying to make sure we keep, is that conversation like it's talking to your friend. So whether it's talking about Strictly, we had Anton de Beck in this morning, whether it's talking about a Sky show, we had Rob Beckett in on Monday, or whether it's talking about a movie that you can either download or is still out in the cinema, or whether it's something on Netflix. The joy of working with Sky as a partnership is not only is all the content available on there, but it allows us to quite happily talk about absolutely anybody without feeling that we're giving anyone a prominence, because the content's all in the one place. That's the mentality that we're going out with the show. Let's get all of the best guests all in one place.
And we get it in the industry. Do you think people listening and radio critics might take a bit more convincing about how it's going to work?
I don't know whether they'll need convincing as to how it's going to work. I think the joy of having a fantastically strong public service broadcaster like the BBC that's been a part of everybody's lives for so long is how it's viewed. If you were to ask somebody, does the BBC have adverts, they'll say no, because they know that they're not a commercial broadcaster. Yet they will also point out that they get sick of the BBC always talking about itself, whether that's trails, whether it's cross-promotion or whatever. They're not seen as commercials, whereas commercial broadcasters talking about themselves, cross-promoting other services that they're running, whether it be TalkSport talking about talk radio, or even a service like The Hits talking about the Greatest Hits Network. When any commercial broadcasters try to cross-promote, because we are seen as carrying commercial messages, that's how it comes across. So I think there's going to be certain people who will never see the similarity, because the BBC just, in their mind, doesn't carry commercials.
I mean, in the end, transparency is key, and we're very mindful of the Ofcom guidelines and regulations. Equally, I think in the modern world, most listeners are very clear, and most consumers are very clear, that there are very often kind of partnerships and commercial alliances, and people are very comfortable and used to that. And as you've said already, Chris, you know, we've made a point of saying publicly on the air, Chris has, that actually, you know, we're proud to have Sky as a partner, and it's a part of who we are, and we're working with them. And I think it's entirely clear to anybody listening exactly how that relationship works.
And I heard a nice link Tuesday morning where he was talking about how brilliant his Bose noise-cancelling headphones are. So it's stuff like that I mentioned in Jaguars and other brands that he couldn't have done on his Radio 2 show, and he seems to be enjoying that bit of freedom.
I think he is enjoying the freedom to not worry about getting into trouble for saying something. You know, the link that you were talking about this on Tuesday about the Bose cancelling headphones was genuinely him just being excited about something that he got, but feeling that actually where he's at now, he can explain himself properly. And transparency is absolutely key.
And I think it's also much more reflective of real life in the 21st century, where I heard a conversation outside the studio in the office. Someone was saying about how they liked somebody else's new vans. You know, brands and the use of brands is part of everyday conversation. And it seems right that we should be able to include that regular conversation on the air.
So in terms of getting some audience, obviously, this is the key thing over the coming months, is to get new listeners to come to Virgin Radio, get some of Chris's old audience from Radio 2. So in terms of how you've structured the show and the sound sound of it. It seems very familiar, and I know a lot of the reviews said it sounds just like his old show on Radio 2 did. I'm guessing that's no accident.
No, it's no accident at all. The phrase Europe's number one breakfast show springs to mind. And if we're trying to make sure that people who are comfortable visiting Chris in that house is going to come around to ours, why rearrange the furniture unnecessarily? We obviously had a look at everything that's in the show and made sure that we do the things that fit us, that fit Virgin's brand values, that work nicely with the partnership with Sky. So everything's there for a reason, not just replicated. But there's also that kind of temptation that I think most programmers have when they walk into a radio station, no matter how successful it is, they feel the need to put their stamp on things. Actually, we've come at it from a slightly different perspective, going, what's already working? What will work for us? How can we make sure we make this as comfortable for new listeners and as exciting for existing listeners as we can without feeling the need to completely reinvent the wheel?
And I guess a lot of people in the industry would say when you hire Chris Evans, you know what you're getting. So he's not there to be shaped and moulded by what you as programmers tell him to do. But I suppose that both makes your job quite easy and makes it quite hard at the same time.
I think actually it's interesting.
It's a fairly diplomatic way of asking the question, but you know what I'm getting.
If all radio talent cared as much about the output as Chris Evans does, I think radio in itself would be a much more engaging and rewarding place. As a programmer who's been a presenter, and Francis, you know, exactly the same, and I'm still trying to persuade him that we've got an overnight show for him that he should really think about coming back on air. You were aware of the things that you'd have done differently when you were a jock. To have presenters who have that kind of level of insight, to have that ability to turn around and communicate as to what they want to do, why they want to do it, how they think it's going to help the end game, and for you to be able to have that conversation is absolutely phenomenal. We've been really lucky that actually the entire lineup at Virgin all adds something different, whether it's Eddie Temple Morris, who's not only, you know, a great musical font of knowledge, but let's not forget, he was also the head of station sound for Radio 1 for a number of years. So he's got a fantastic production here. You've got Matt Richardson, who's relatively new to radio, still only a couple of years into it, but has been performing stand-up for a number of years at high level, so knows how to engage with an audience on a more that relatable level that necessarily presenters kind of forget. When you're doing your material in front of an audience and you can see that reaction every single time you finish telling your joke or whatever, it does make you look at things in a slightly different way. I think Kate Lawler and Tim Cocker are very underrated presenters. I think they have this wonderful ability to just be themselves and communicate. And Kate in particular uses social media and really relates it through. So to have another presenter along those lines, somebody who's not just coming and saying, this is what I do, this is how I do it, take it or leave it, but this is what I do, this is how I do it, this is how I think it's going to benefit. How do you think we can tweak things? How do you think we can make things work? It's what's actually made this probably the most enjoyable radio station I've ever run.
Does one of you get to do Snoop sessions with him after the show then? That's what everybody wants to know.
We catch up every single day after the show. We caught up before it. And I think any programmer who tells you that there's only one way to air check a presenter probably could do with a bit of coaching and air checking themselves. There was one PD who I will never name who famously told me that they would do all of their air checks with a stopwatch. And as long as the presenter was under 30 seconds, they didn't care what they said. And that's certainly one way of doing it. We've all seen Private Parts and remember the scene of Howard Stern being told how to do WNBC. And no, you've got it wrong. It's WNBC. Yeah, no, that's what I'm doing. So a good coaching session should be sitting down with whichever presenter it is and working out what works, what needs tweaking, what's going well, and what do you want more of.
And I have to tell you, the first two sentences with Chris after the show today was him saying to me, first thing, was the show all right? And the second thing was, is there anything I need to know? So I think, just to echo everything Mike said, we're dealing with somebody who has an energy, a commitment, a passion, as well as a skill that I think is extraordinary. He couldn't sleep last night because he was so excited about the show yesterday and looking forward to the show today. Chris is somebody who's absolutely determined to do the best job and still loves his job more than many presenters who've been doing it for a far shorter period of time.
And never mind 4 days a week at Radio 1 as he did in the 90s. He's going to be doing 6 days a week because he says he's going to do this Sunday show, which I think was supposed to be a best of. He's now going to do that live. Is that right?
Still going to be a best of, but because he wants to make sure that everything is hitting the ground running and he's throwing his all at everything, we're going to start off doing that show live. And I think, you know, to have that level of enthusiasm from any signing is absolutely fantastic. you should have seen the look on his face with the rest of the production team when we're having that conversation. but no, I mean, look, you're used to dealing with people who work Monday to Friday. You know, there's a lot of presenters around the UK who work six shows. There's a lot of people who would love to get that sixth show off. To have somebody who wants to come in at the start and make sure that it hits the ground running and it sounds as good as it can do, find me a radio station that wouldn't take anyone up on that offer.
And that building you're in now, there's a big buzz in it, and we heard that on the air already in the first couple of shows. He had people from the fifth floor coming up and joining in the show, and he was saying, oh, can we come down to you and have a look at your floor? So I'm guessing that place is just alive at the moment with this kind of new thing that's launched this week in it.
This is a most extraordinary building when you kind of stand by the lift, which are very clever lifts, and you look at the brands that reside inside this building. You've got The Sun on Sunday, you've got The Times, you've got The Sunday Times, you've got The Times Literary Supplement, you've got Dow Jones, you've got HarperCollins, and. And I think, you know, we are a part of that family and that team, and the energy and the excitement and the commitment about wireless moving in, the national brands moving in, is unparalleled in my experience.
And it's a big time in radio. Obviously, the back end of last year, we had all these announcements. The shows are all starting now. And another one this week from Bauer with Simon Mayo and a new classical station. This happening at the same time as you launching this new show and moving into the new buildings, it just kind of tells us how important radio is in the landscape of the country and of the media at the moment.
Absolutely. There was a tweet that I saw over the last 48 hours talking about how exciting digital radio is, how exciting the radio scene is. And I think you'll find that from everybody. The support, the tweets, the messages, the texts that we've all had wishing us luck for starting. And I'm sure it was the same at Radio 2 for the launch of Zoe. I know it was the same when Greg James started at Radio 1. And I'm sure it'll be the same when Bauer launched Scala. When Rossi was the first voice on the Greatest Hits network, you know, he got a bunch of messages from people in the industry. There's James Cridland famously has his lazy buggles headlines watch, where he talks about how many times video killed the radio star is used as a headline. If there was ever a time to prove that radio as an industry is more thriving, is more alive, and is more exciting to be in, it really is now. If you look at markets like Australia, where they're very used to having a calendar year in terms of the presenters, where it's not infrequent where a breakfast show or a drive show will finish the calendar year at one station and start after a long summer's break at the next one. To see this much change all in one place in UK is probably a little unheard of, but it's all about actually trying to create more listener choice, trying to make sure that we've got the best in terms of engaging, compelling content out there, and to get rid of that old mentality that radio is just this thing that we broadcast through. And actually, it's all about the content and how we get our message out, whether it be through a connected speaker, whether it be through an app, whether it's through time-shifted listening. Radio is more than just a receiver. It's actually back to a great way of describing how to entertain people through audio.
And Francis, the more commercial competitors you've got for your ears of your listeners, I guess the better it makes all radio for everybody, doesn't it?
Oh, I think, you know, there's no real doubt. Competition makes us better. And this level of churn in the market is fascinating because inevitably people's habits are disrupted and it forces people to kind of reassess their current habits and to think about new ones. And I think we're very confident that it'll benefit us, it'll benefit Virgin, it'll benefit the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky and the rest of the day. And I think you're right, it's so exciting that radio, which, you know, I remember a long time ago when the internet explosion was happening, people would talk about radio and television at the time as old media. And we just thought, oh my goodness, it's the end of the road. And actually what we've got is a sector that is thriving. and that is still making front page news, not just because on the Sun, where we put it there, but even on the BBC homepage yesterday. The second story was Theresa May was number one, Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky was number two. And so radio is still absolutely front and centre in terms of people's lives and lifestyles. And I think that's so exciting.
Well, it's great to catch up with you both. And here's to the next, 5 years at least of Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky. See, you've got me doing it now, mentioning the sponsor.
Good man.
Thanks.
Good to talk to you. Cheers.
Broadcast Bionics brings you Phone Box, Oasis, Virtual Director, and many more innovative solutions for creative radio people. Come to bionics.co.uk and find out more.
It is the Radio Today programme. That was Mike Cass and Francis Curry on the show talking about Chris Evans. Well, Radio Today's editor, Roy Martin, is here now to dissect Evans's return. What did you make of the first show? It was fairly safe, wasn't it, on Monday, Roy?
It was good, yeah, it was good. I don't know about me dissecting it. A few people will be doing that online with the blogs. I'm happy to take other people's opinions on that. But yeah, it was... It was good. I wrote in eRadio this week that it, whilst it feels like the same show because of the jingles and the people and everything else, it also feels completely different. So it's exactly the same, but completely different. There's my analysis of the week of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show.
You said same show, different station, didn't you? Which I think the BBC quoted you on the News Online piece.
They did, which was nice of them. And my next door neighbour texted me and said, "You're on the website. You're on the news." But yeah, a few days in, it's becoming more commercial, which I suppose is an obvious thing to say. But there's no pause for thought and things like, and cross promotion for the BBC. So it just little things make it sound a lot different. If that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah. Just one mention of BBC Radio 2 out of a song by accident on Monday morning as well. We've all been there.
I missed that.
We said the wrong song. Yeah, here it is actually.
No, Oasis, roll with it, BBC. Radio 2 is where we were.
Not there anymore.
But we wish them all the very best. All the BBs.
So we turned that around quite nicely, but there we are. We've all been there. We've all done it.
We have indeed.
And I hear some of the staff at Wogan House were tuned in to Chris on Monday morning as well, just to have a sneaky little listen. So.
Of course they were. Why not? Everybody was. I believe half the wireless group were as well.
Apparently so.
Didn't he send breakfast round to all the local stations?
Yeah, I think he did. Very nice of him to do that, actually. But and I think some of them were encouraged to tune in and have a little bit of a listen around the group and then go back to their own local services. So big day for radio.
Breakfast on Chris.
I know. So the other big news of the week, we kind of preempted last week on this podcast, and we had an announcement late last week from Bauer about scaling back Heat Radio, taking it off DAB, becoming internet only, and instead we're getting a classical music station.
A classical entertainment music station for the youngsters. What are we calling this one, Stuart?
This is Scala Radio. Or Scala, if you're from the north.
So Scala Radio, probably a nod to the Italians, I'm guessing.
The Italian opera house, and I think it's an Italian word for kind of scales and ladders, like a musical scale. There is also a cinema, I think, in London called Scala, which Mayo and Kermode mention quite often on their film show.
Now, I believe there was potentially a different name for this station.
Really?
Are you aware of this?
Yes. No. Have you got some gossip?
I believe that the title of the project was Project Quaver.
Okay.
Nothing to do with Cheesy Crisps. And there was another name mentioned that it could have been, and that name could have been Maestro Radio, which would also have been quite a clever name for a radio station. So who knows what's happened before this all went public, but it's out now, and the station launches... is it the beginning of March? It's quite a while off yet, isn't it?
Yeah, 4th of March. I think Heat is going to end at the start of February, and there'll be a month build-up to Scala launching on the 4th of March. So Simon Mayo on mid-mornings. We don't know who the other weekday daytime presenters are yet. There'll be some weekend shows from Angelica Bell and Chris Rogers and Mark Kermode, and also Goldie and William Orbit. But some of the names they've announced include former Classic FM presenters Mark Forrest and Jamie Crick. We're guessing one of those might be on breakfast. Sam Hughes, who does Weekend Breakfast at the moment on Planet Rock, she's on the lineup too. And Charles Nove, ex of Radio 2 as a newsreader, and I think he was at BBC Oxford, left BBC Oxford just before Christmas as a presenter as well, so he's going to be on Scala Radio.
Very brave of them to go after Classic FM and Radio 3. They've kind of got it sort, the market sewn up, but when you read what they're actually going to do, try and attract the younger audience, because Radio 3 and Classic, I think between them, they're all above 50, aren't they, the audience for those stations. So we'll see. We'll see if 20-year-olds want to listen to classical music. And if they do, then Bauer's got them the station for them.
Yeah, and interestingly, Heat on DAB has 638,000 weekly reach at the moment and 2.2 million weekly listening hours. So they're up for grabs, because I'm guessing most Heat listeners are not going to listen to Scala Radio. So the competition for ears hots up.
Yeah, well, Virgin might grab some of those, and then they'll probably default to the likes of the Hits or Heart or Capital. So, yeah, very interesting time in radio. And another station expected from Bauer as well. Our eagle eyes have just noticed a trademark from Bauer for Country Hits Radio, which was floating around last year. So maybe an announcement is imminent on that one.
And depending what they do with the capacity from Heat, they might split it up and get two DAB Plus stations onto D2, so Scala and Country Hits, or Country Hits might be going on some of the local multiplexes. As we were talking about on this podcast last week, they've reduced some bit rates and created space on some of the Bauer-owned big city multiplexes, so we'll see.
Yeah, the classical station certainly needs to be high bit rate for obvious reasons, so I think DAB Plus is the only way to go for that, and then they've got room for another one. Yeehaw
indeed. So some other news this week as well, there was quite a bit of other things going on, including we saw what Global has asked Ofcom for in terms of localness area changes for the new regulations, and it looks like Ofcom's going to probably say yes to these. You can see the maps on radiotoday.co.uk, but as expected, really, they want to get Brighton and Southampton in the same geographic area for capital sharing, and a few other reorganisations for the Heart stations.
Yeah, and that makes sense, because to have one station cover the South Coast and then the others the West and the East, that certainly makes sense. So I think it's only a matter of time before we hear the plans from Global. I've suggested maybe next month we'll hear something, and then who knows, maybe some networking will start in the usual launching radio month of March.
Radio 4 is looking for a new controller now, after the announcement that Gwyneth Williams is going to leave. She first joined the BBC more than 40 years ago. I think she's been the Radio 4 controller for about 8 or 9 years now. So big changes there. That could be an interesting one to see who gets that, to learn what direction Radio 4 might be heading in.
Indeed, out of the blue as well. But she is over 60 and she's got a good BBC pension there, so why not disappear? She's done a good job, and she can retire knowing that. So good luck to her.
And new studios for BBC Somerset opened this week. You were there, Roy.
Yes, I jollied along, went to Somerset, and they're just off the motorway, the M5, in a new business park. They've been there about a year, but they've been waiting for the right time to do the official opening, just off the M5 in Taunton. They're officially opened by Chris Burns, who's the head of local radio at the BBC, and the managing editor is Nick Bull. And I put a microphone in front of him and said, "What's all this about?"
Well, it's been a brilliant day, actually. It's a great story for BBC Somerset, because we've always been an opt-out station of BBC Radio Bristol and always felt like really like a little sister. But we feel quite grown up now, because we're on all day, every day, on a weekday between 6 and 10 at night. And what happened today is the new head of local radio, Chris Burns, came down and officially opened our new building. And it's given us a really new lease of life. We've got two proper studios now and a generator. In the old building, we were struggling with some old kit, just the one studio, and every time the power went, we were in the same position, so we're having to go up to Bristol. So we really find that we can properly serve the people of Somerset as we should now, and it's given us a brand new lease of life, really, here, and we're really thrilled and excited to be serving the county of Somerset.
And you're on all day live and local from here. Tell us about your lineup. Who's on breakfast? Who's on daytime?
Yeah, so we made a little tweak to that. So Claire Carter used to start at 6:30. So we brought her forward to start at 6. And she's doing the brilliant Sounds Familiar competition, which is really engaging people and getting loads of calls. She ends at 9. Simon Parkin's doing a slightly longer stint now. So he's on 9 till 1, including a feature called Backtracks at 12, which is essentially a Mystery Years format. But again, we're getting lots of interaction and comment on that. Brand new afternoon show between 1 and 4 with Andy Bennett, who's a local boy, used to be a welder, lives in Burnham, and he's really popular as well. Same in the afternoon, Matt Faulkner's been on Drive for quite some time, long established show between 4 and 7 with the latest news and digest. And then another brand new show in the evening with Charlie Taylor called Connected between 7 and 10, which is all really focused on hyper local community things and things that BBC Somerset wouldn't have done in the past. That's what I'm really proud of. Charlie's got a list of contacts and people that he's already spoken to in 3 or 4 months that we would never have featured on the radio station. So we're really proud of that.
And you cover quite a large geographical area as well.
Yeah, Somerset's quite a big county. It's a big total survey area. It's over 500,000. So our challenge is kind of to get out there a bit more and actually spread the word. I think that's something that I mentioned that we've struggled with in the past, that people say, oh, we didn't realise Somerset was here. Despite the fact we've been here for 30 years, we're still in that sort of footprint of Radio Bristol. And what we're really keen is for people, if they are lapsed listeners, to try us again, but equally get the word out there that we're kind of we're newer and we're modern and fresh, and with Chris Burns at the helm, I think we'll find out fairly soon kind of the new direction of travel, which can only be exciting for us.
Chris, opening the studio, said it's very anarchy to see some brand new studios, as it was. What else do you have here for the BBC? Any other services?
We offer a pretty full-time digital offering, and that's been very popular. We are just entering the kind of sounds realm. We started a brand new podcast with Charlie Taylor for the cricket show, and of course the beauty of that is huge interest in Somerset cricket around the world, so that's actually picked up really good traction. And we have a TV reporter here most of the time, so they're out filming for TV, but we've also got some facilities in the new building, which means that we can do radio for anywhere in the world. So we routinely get guests for Radio 4, 5 Live and other local radio stations, but we also got an amazing bit of kit which is controllable by anyone, where we can put any TV contribution to air, so we can go on to Politics Live or the Breakfast programme from Salford, and it's really kind of revolutionised what we can offer and who we can feature from Somerset.
Nick, thank you very much.
Pleasure. Lovely to see you, Roy.
That was BBC Somerset's Nick Bull talking to Roy Martin this week. Now, quick word about Clean Feed. If you've not tried it yet, we mention it every week, but it's definitely worth giving it a go if you haven't had a go yet. It's a browser where you can connect between computers in studio quality audio. It's great for doing podcasts or doing down-the-line guests, interviews, co-hosting your show from a remote location. It's been designed for radio people and for podcasters, and it's really simple to use, and the quality is absolutely magnificent. You can even record within the browser as well. Now, CleanFeed doesn't cost you anything to get started. It'll just take you 30 seconds to sign up, and within minutes you'll be doing your first live interview or recording. Find out more at cleanfeed.net. Still to come, we've got David Lloyd's Radio Moments and James Cridland's thoughts on Virgin going ad-free in the mornings. Before that, though, Radio Today's Dom Chambers has been speaking to the recently elected chair of the Community Media Association. It's Danny Lawrence, and he started by asking him about the CMA's priorities for the next 12 months.
As you know, technology's changing, and the government intend to roll out the small-scale DAB, hopefully this year. And therefore, the CMA are going to be heavily involved in making sure that our members are looked after, and that we can have an input into the legislation before it goes to government, the draft legislation. But I think most importantly, I think I've joined as chair, an exciting time. There's a lot going on. There's the community radio coverage extensions that's going on at the moment. There's the small-scale DAB, the excitement and the buzz around that. And there's obviously the community radio FM licences, that's also carrying on. So there's a lot this year, as I've taken over, this is the year for a lot of things going to be going on. So I want to be involved, especially with the rollout of DAB, the small scale. I want to be involved in that. So this year, it's going to be an exciting time in radio for us community broadcasters. So I'm proud and pleased to be a part of that.
The CMA has gone from an organisation that was comparatively well resourced with employing a whole staff and in offices and working very hard to support its members, but also the wider group of community radio stations and then, of course, community media. Over the recent years, that staff has dwindled and dwindled as some of the traditional resourcing or revenue streams through European funding, etc., has dried up. I mean, how do you see that the CMA can resource itself better to perhaps offer a greater range of support services?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's no secret that the CMA at one time had 12 members of staff and had great resources, and not just the community radio sector, but there's lots of voluntary sector organisations that are in the same boat that over the years have had organisations that have been big, and then as soon as the grant funding's run out, have ended up small. I think it's a challenge for any company, whether it's a CMA or any other group. But as far as I'm concerned, I think the most important thing is to look for funding opportunities to try and improve so that we've got more members of staff. I think it's important as well that we ask our members to take on more roles. And it's great to be, you know, with groups like the Community Radio Awards and the Radio Hub and the new Local Radio Alliance that you've set up. It's good to have all those things going on, because I think that it takes a bit of weight off of one person's shoulders. And I think that people have realised that we can't do everything ourselves, and therefore it's important that we're involved, but it's important that groups that are set up are supported and that can feed into our processes going forward. So there is a way forward, and it's going to be challenging for me to try and turn it around, but it'd be interesting over the next year to see what happens.
One of the issues about the CMA is that it's generally benevolent. Its work is for the benefit of all, and yet it does have a paid membership structure. What then are the arguments for becoming a member of the CMA?
Well, I think it's important that people's views are expressed. The CMA does a lot of work for the sector. Whether you're a member or not, you could benefit from being a member. But I think it's important that people's views are taken forward, and especially with our links with government and with Ofcom, those kind of bodies, and being part of one big family. And I think it's important that of being a member of something, not just community radio, but community television as well. I think it's important that we have a stronger voice. And I think that it is important that, you know, years ago when I was doing my act in Malarkey, I was a member of Equity. Back then, you couldn't work unless you had a card. Now, you can work and not have a card, but I'm still a member because I feel proud to be a member. And I think it's those kind of things, being a member of an association, that, you know, it's a bit like being a member of any union or association. It's about having that feel about being belonging to something, and I think that's important.
Where do you see community radio licensees in the current kind of landscape of the UK's radio industry?
Well, that's a good question. I think the coverage with this small-scale DAB is going to be phenomenal. I think that I see technology moving us forward, especially with internet radio as well. So I'm sort of going to sort of bail out of that one and say that let's see where technology takes us over the next 6 months or so or year with the rollout of small-scale DAB.
Well, Danny, it's been great talking to you. When I was chair of the CMA, you were the vice chair. Now, you're the chair now. You get all my support, and best of luck with it. And thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you very much, Dom.
Danny Lawrence there, talking to Dom Chambers. And you can hear more from Dom on our sister podcast, In Radio, which has a focus on the community radio sector and roots into our industry.
I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. Last year, Chris Evans was the presenter of the most listened to breakfast show in Europe, the Chris Evans Breakfast Show on BBC Radio 2. This is your wake up call. Moira, Moira, and Lynn. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Vassar, and him. Are you ready? The Chris Evans Breakfast Show. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Good morning. BBC earns most of its money from a television licence fee, which is about $195, which households in the UK have to pay if they have a television. And this licence fee and the sale of programmes to other broadcasters pays for the whole thing, so there are no commercials or sponsor credits on BBC Radio 2. It's entirely commercial free. And perhaps that's why 14.6 million people tune in every week. Well, of course, it's not entirely true. The BBC does a very good job of promoting its own services. And were they to spend money on similar advertising elsewhere, that would be a very high bill indeed. So there's plenty of promotion of new BBC television shows and plenty of breathless interviews with big BBC stars who often have something to plug. But that's fine, and that's not really commercial messaging. Chris Evans left the BBC at the end of last year and has just started presenting the Chris Evans Breakfast Show on Virgin Radio. This is your wake-up call.
Good morning, friends.
Now, Virgin Radio, a trademark of Virgin, yes, but owned by Rupert Murdoch's News Corp in the UK, is a commercial radio station. But the Chris Evans Breakfast Show is entirely commercial-free. There's not a single commercial in the entire 3.5 hours. Well, of course, that's not entirely true either. He's sponsored by Sky, one of the UK's largest TV broadcasters. There are occasional sponsor credits, but if the first show is anything to go by, there'll be plenty of promotion of new Sky television shows and plenty of breathless interviews with big Sky stars who often have something to plug. But there won't be a single 30-second ad for washing powder or sausages or double glazing or anything else. Not for the first 100 years, said Chris, presumably exaggerating slightly in his first show. It's a canny move. If the only thing holding his previous audience back was the prospect of radio commercials, then Virgin Radio have removed that objection. And why not? In truth, the loss of commercial inventory from The Breakfast Show won't damage the station much. It stands to considerably gain from the marketing and halo effect that its new big star will have. When radio's online competition has a much lighter ad load, or no ads at all, it's a clever move to work to rethink commercial radio's revenue model. So good on Virgin Radio for giving that a go. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. And now here's the commercial-free David Lloyd.
Moment. It's 20 years this week since one of UK radio's most famous stunts on BRMB in Birmingham, two strangers and a wedding.
Okay, so this is the deal then. You marry the complete stranger on Monday. You have got Monday free, haven't you, just in case it's you?
Yeah.
You don't have to go to work or anything like that.
Okay, good.
So they marry the complete stranger. They won't have met until they get to the altar. Are you fine with that?
No problem.
Yeah?
Mad. Absolutely mad.
That's the thing. They get married, then they have the honeymoon of a lifetime. You go off to this...
Two strangers had a wedding on BRMB. Mike Owen was in charge of press for the occasion, and he says things were quiet at first, but that soon changed.
I was mobbed by not only the UK media, the UK popular press, radio, television... unprecedented for, you know, one radio station in one city in the UK to get this level of international interest, American television, and it was the first reality broadcast. It really was the start of taking ordinary people and putting them in extraordinary situations.
Mike Owen on BRMB's Two Strangers and a Wedding this week in 1999. This year, we've been getting quite used to comings and goings, haven't we? But last year, it was quite a novelty to hear one announced.
I've had an amazing opportunity that's come into my life for the last couple of months, and I know this must feel very sudden to you all this morning, and it's not my job to come here in the morning and put you on a bum steer in the morning, but, you know, I've only told my mum at the weekend, so people in this building are only finding out right now, but I am going to be leaving. I always wondered what it'd be like to actually say those words, because I've been here for such a big part of my life. When I first came here 12 years ago, I feel like a different person. I feel like, especially the last couple of years, I've changed so much. So the first thing I want to say is, please don't be sad. I have a heavy heart saying this to you. I can't believe I'm going to be going. You know, it's been a very emotional...
Christian O'Connell, just this week last year, announcing his departure from Absolute Radio. He'd begun there actually this week 13 years ago. DAB is now old enough to be part of our radio history. This week in 1990, the first DAB trials were held with the Eureka standard from Crystal Palace. It worked, and the scene was set. Didn't take too long for Liz Forgan at the BBC to say that she rather liked it. She said the BBC has to move ahead of the market if it is to fulfil its public service obligations. And the topic was later the stuff of tomorrow's world.
Radio is about to go digital. And what that's going to mean is CD quality sound, better reception, more choice, and even pictures along with the music.
The third age of radio arrived today. That's how the BBC described its launch of a new system known as digital audio broadcasting. DAB will offer listeners high-quality sound, free from interference. But the new radios needed to receive the service cost more than £700 each and won't be in the shops for 2 years.
And then by 96, the Beeb was trying out some pilot stations.
And just a reminder to welcome you once more to this first edition of BBC Jazz with me, Campbell Burnap. Well, if we're thinking in terms
jazz,
of
one of the experimental music, speech and drama channels from 96. Just a little bit of the DAB story, which will have a few more chapters by the end of 2019. When commercial radio launched in Edinburgh, FM was newfangled, and that was this week, 44 years ago.
This is not only a historic occasion for all of us here in East Central Scotland, but it's also a deeply moving one, despite the hour of the day. Because at long last, we here in the East have our own radio station. A station that belongs to us, and to us alone. A station that we can guide and shape. A station in which everyone can play an important role. A station that will listen as often as it speaks.
We'll be bringing you news, traffic, weather, community information, food prices, tips and hints, and our housewife of the day. The Daybreak Show, that's where the action is every morning of the week, and that's where the music is specially selected by you, for you. Like this one from our very own chart-topping group here in Scotland, Pilot.
Hello to Radio 4th this week in 1975. Hello to Radio 4th this week in 75, as Edinburgh became the second Scottish city to get commercial radio, just as it had been second in the 20s with the new BBC stations. Is it really 10 years since Jonathan Ross returned to Radio 2?
How many complaints now is it? 27,000. Russell Brand gone from Radio 2. Jonathan Ross may not have a future at the BBC. It's dependent on the outcome of meetings today. Is this a terrible day for the corporation?
10 years this week since Jonathan returned to Radio 2 after his suspension over Saxgate. Radio 1 now has 5.5 million subscribers on YouTube. This week, 5 years ago, it hit the first million.
BBC Radio 1.
On the pirate radio front, this week in 1966, the Radio Caroline ship, the Mi Amigo, famously dragged her anchor and ended up running aground at Holland Haven at Frinton. The station did get back on air from another ship.
The Johnny Blackburn Show.
Yes, indeed, but to be quite honest, it's the Tom Rod Show, but for the sake of my jingles, I'll keep calling it that, but it is the Tom Rod Show. Tony Blackburn here, sitting in for you. Hope very much you're having a lovely day, everyone, and enjoying the shows from Caroline South. Test transmission on 259. Here's the number 23 sound from Norma Tanega.
More pirate drama this week, 49 years ago, from a new generation of station.
You're tuned to 186 metres in the medium wave band, 1,607 megacycles, and if you say, well, that's not correct, true, you're listening to the shortwave in that case, at 49 metres, that's 6.210 megacycles. My name? Well, it doesn't matter really, but it's Roger Twiggy Day. Very nice to be talking to you, and could you please write into us? We'd love to hear from you. And the time actually is now 6.45.
RNI, Radio North Sea International Testing, this week in 1970. And a step on the way to the final generation of pirates offshore this week in 1984, as Laser took up anchor.
Good morning. I'm Rick Harris, and on behalf of David Lee Stone, Jesse Brandon, Steve Masters, Joe Young, Tim Levenseller, Bill Voigt, Dennis Legere, David London, I'm pleased to introduce you to a radio station, All Europe Radio, Laser 558. We promise to bring you at least 54 minutes of international hit songs each hour we broadcast. All hits, all the time.
So there we are, landmarks in the lives of three significant offshore stations from three generations, which all affected today's radio. 1992 now, and Something New in Berkshire.
Editor Simon Major. He's been here since day one, overseeing the multi-million pound project and preparing to bring BBC local radio to the county of Berkshire.
I felt like a janitor when I first moved in here. It was an empty building. It had once been a printworks on the Portman Road in Reading. It was echoey, and these engineers turned up putting in miles of wire. We calculate that there are 1,300 miles of wire and cable have gone into this building.
Don't you just love those sorts of figures? You can just imagine the situation, can't you? The engineers working hard, working all the hours God sends, trying to get the station on air, and there's some person from PR wandering around with a clipboard. Just need a figure. Can somebody give me a figure for the matter virus? Please, I need a figure. I'll give you a figure. So, with the first live football match 92 years ago...
Brooks has got the ball, running eagerly, hoping for the consolation of a goal.
The first English programme on Radio Luxembourg 208, 68 years ago...
This is Radio Luxembourg on our new frequency, 208 metres on the medium wave band.
And the BBC Trust asking the BBC to think again about the proposed BBC local radio cuts 7 years ago... Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David, and to our contributors James Cridland, Roy Martin and Dom Chambers this week. Thanks also to guests Danny Lawrence, Nick Bull, Francis Curry and Mike Cass. And of course, thanks to you for listening. We'll see you next week.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.